Bing. So mine's recording now.
I believe mine is recording.
I got it. There you go.
All right, okay. Here we go.
Okay, so it's Alex Simmons here and
Chris Ryan.
And we're here trying to do we're trying to do an episode of Tell the Damn Story.
We're telling the damn story in a diner.
Yes, and I think I called it out before, but that recording didn't work all that well. So we're in the Riverdale Diner, and by the way, we're eating, so you're going to hear kind of interesting sounds as well as background noises. And one of the things, too, is why are we trying to do this in a diner? What the heck were we thinking?
Well, the idea was that we are rarely in the same place at the same time. So since we're here, you know, we're one of those work-when-we-can type people.
Yeah.
Why just sit and chew the fat when we can...
Actually, we are sitting
and
chewing
the fat.
Yeah, we can record the fat. Or we can record us chewing the fat, yeah. Now, actually, Chris made a remark. Chris and I, we've known each other for, like, almost, what, 30 years?
Almost
30 years. And he lives in one part of the East Coast here. Not that far away, really. You know, it's within...
Today, I actually found out we live 15 miles away. There's a Hudson River between that, but, you know.
Yeah. And we see each other physically, face-to-face, maybe once every 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does that say about civilization? But the other thing was...
There is some hope, right?
As long as it's 15 miles. The other thing, too, is... We come to places like this sometimes, you know, individually, to work. And I think, Chris, you had actually asked me, you know, why would I go to a noisy place like a diner?
Because I know it works for you.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why does it work?
Yeah.
Tell me.
Well, again, the way I look at it, there's different atmospheres, different... sounds and things that affect people, you know, there's the loud noises of trains and things like that. Sometimes that's irritating and whatever. And sometimes when I go to write, depending on the project I'm working on or whether or not it's something that I'm stuck in a certain place with, being in a quiet place, you know, like sometimes I'll work late at night when everybody's gone to bed and the city is quote-unquote asleep and all that, and it's quieter and the energy's lower. Not mine, the city's energy is lower. Then, you know, I'll work then, and that's the mood and that's the atmosphere that I need in order to get through this difficult piece, whatever it may be. But other times, I find that I feed on the energy and the sounds around me. And it becomes, I guess the best way to describe it, becomes sort of like becomes sort of like white noise. Literally, there's so many different types of people. There's different, you know, in places that I go in particular, sometimes there's a lot of characters, or there's, you know, multicultural, or there's something about it that just the sounds and the movements and all that becomes this sort of cone of energy that I have nothing to do with. I don't have to take care of anybody. I don't have to respond to any of them. But that energy is still there, and I seem to feed on it. And it creates sort of this comfort zone of sound that feeds me while I'm creating.
Well, Stephen King uses loud music like AC/DC or something like that.
Oh, really?
That works for him. Why does this pulsing energy of other people work for you? How does that keep you going as a writer?
Well, I think, you know, there's probably all kinds of theories that one could expound on here, but I think one of them is... I feel that artists, you know, whether they're illustrators or writers or musicians or whatever, or dancers, artists, we reflect life. We feed on life around us, and then we reflect it through our filters, our own personal filters. And I think for me, a lot of the time is I see these different characters, I see these different people, I see, you know, children, adults, the middle age group or the older group, they all have their own look, feel, rhythm, sound, and that stuff, some of that is stuff that I collect and keep in my mental or written files for characters and situations and things that I may work on or I'm in the middle of working on. Because, I mean, that's really a part of it. If you don't, and I say this to my students, if you don't really observe life, if you don't really look at people as they go by, or as you're sitting on a train or a bus or whatever, you're in a restaurant, and notice the little quirks. Notice the little habits, mannerisms, the clothing, you know, the haircuts, things like that, the jewelry they wear. If you don't see all that, if you blank all that out, then when you go to create, all you're reflecting pretty much is you. You know, that's it. Your sole source of creativity is you. And you're not feeding you enough. At least that's the way I see it.
You got to put, you have to put in before you can, you know, create out, right? I do a lot of that with malls and schools. You know, I love the parade. You know, give me a crowded place where, you know, if I'm with Tina, my wife, and she's on a mission, whether it's new shoes, whatever, and I can just float by her side and just take everyone in. Oh man. That you see so many people, and the human behavior is a never-ending source of inspiration.
And again, you know, and I know you know this, again, when I speak or use the word rhythm when I talk about people's energies or movements or speaking patterns or things like that, that's a legitimate term. Because, and again, as writers in particular, but also illustrators, but as writers, we need to be aware of how people from different cultures or different backgrounds or different socioeconomic, how they move, how they talk, how they present them, what do they do with their hands? Because those are all elements of when you go to write, when you go to create, you put those elements in, those characters become more genuine.
Yeah.
You know, people can identify when, yeah, I know that guy, or I've seen that, or yeah, that feels or that sounds right. So those are things that you need to pick up on. Otherwise, you wind up with one or two-dimensional characters. Right.
One of the things I do to either my wife's never-ending amusement or, you know, she's getting points for the afterlife. Whenever we're traveling or in a mall or whatever, I kind of have this ongoing dialogue or monologue going on while I see whoever's coming in our direction or whoever's standing across the way, and I look at them and their body language and their interaction with whoever they're with, and I just fictionalize the story. You know, it's always just practicing. You know, what does that physicality, what story does that tell? You know, what is the relationship here? And a lot of it's for the amusement of my wife, but you know, we all act out of our own need as well. And for me, that just keeps the imagination going. And it's a great continuous exercise to just what if. What right. if everything.
Exactly.
Just don't say it too loud or
yeah.
else, you know, what if you got a punch in the nose.
Right, right. Or you're staring at people and start giving them that stalker, you know, victim yeah. scenario or syndrome.
But officer, he was staring at me for 20 minutes.
Yeah,
it was a really good story, officer.
Yeah, right.
Come with me, young man.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is you know, we talk about taking mental notes or playing, you know, sort of games in our head with these, but you should also write these things down, or if you've got your cell phone with you or something, you can tape it, you know.
I forever use the memo.
Yeah.
You know, I just, well, finally, we're getting the Simple Rebellion laid out. And
that's his latest novel.
And that was... a lot of that, a lot of the ideas were in memo first. You know, I would be making morning tea or in the mall or, you know, traveling in the car, and Tina tends to drive, and something would come up. Unfortunately, a lot of those ideas came in the shower, so I would jump out of the shower and grab the phone and hit the memo. Sometimes I would dictate it in, and sometimes type it in. Dictating it in is always fun. I recommend you read it back immediately.
Yeah.
Because very often it will say something different than what you intended. That's funny, but just fix it then, because if you wait till the end...
You won't remember what the original thought was, and then you've got this interesting cacophony of words.
Oh, yeah. You say, it sounded great. What was it? But one of the good things with memo is you can email that to yourself.
Exactly.
And then cut and paste it right into your story. So it's
exactly.
very good.
Exactly. So, and again, in putting together a dossier of characters. You know, you want to put down some of the specifics because you won't remember them. Unless they're the type of people you see every day and it's constantly reinforced, you won't remember. Like right now, Chris and I are sitting here in this dining room. Chris is wearing a blue plaid shirt.
It's cotton. And blue jeans and a blue t-shirt.
And a blue
underneath.
T-shirt, yeah.
I am Captain Blueberry.
Yeah, right. And I've just basically said that he's wearing this plaid shirt and he threw in the other details. I did not say that the shirt looks like he's had it for some time. It doesn't mean it looks ratty, but I can tell this is not a brand new shirt, that he's worn it a lot, that, you know, maybe it's an old friend. Maybe it's the thing that he throws on multiple Saturdays because this is Saturday we're talking. But these are details.
Last three Saturdays.
See, there you go. Sorry.
The first of those three Saturdays, it was on a rack in one of the stores. This is fairly new, and I went out of my way to look for that worn look. It's harder to find the flannels we grew up with, the flannel shirts we grew up with. And God bless Tina. She's very patient. We walked past 20 or 30 of those faux flannels. Those hip flannels.
Yeah.
I was looking for this look that looked like, as you were buying it, it looked like you had it for 20 years. So, mission accomplished.
And all of that says something about Chris's character. So, once again, that's the kind of information that you pull, because it speaks about this individual, this person. Why could he walk, or why did he walk by 20-some-odd shirts that look cool, brand new, blah, 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 whatever? Because he has a particular need or a want or a goal, and that's what he's focused on. And again, that can be a flannel shirt that looks like it's been around for a while, or it can be the ring that Frodo has to take, you know, or it can be a treasure buried somewhere, or it can be a nuclear device that you got to stop these people from However you look at it, who these people are, who these characters are moving through the world that you're creating, you've got to give them that life.
And it does help to place them in a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tina and I were watching, I guess it was a playoff game, you know.
Sure.
And there are players with what I call those hipster beards.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? They're out and kind of, in the old days, we'd think they were wild beards.
Yeah, like lumberjacks.
But,
or
some of them have the big beard like that, but the side of their heads are shaved.
Yeah.
And then there's very stylized stuff going on top.
Yeah, fade is almost a piece of artwork.
All of that places them in a certain generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Up the block for me is a couple that, you know, just their physicality places them at Woodstock, you know? I have a couple of young people that I work with, and you can see where they're becoming aware of their style. You can see where they are socially on the hunt, or where they've had their first couple of kids, and that is the focus.
Mm-hmm.
And the latest styles that they're wearing are from before the kids,
mm-hmm.
because their focus is, you know, all of these things. None of it is meant as a put down.
No,
all of these things are fodder for creating the dimension of your character.
And again, I'm glad you said that last part too about not put downs, because it's not a judgmental thing. You know, our intention is not to sit around looking at people and calling it out as this looks weird, or they look bizarre, or there's something wrong with them. It's not about that at all. It's about seeing your world and understanding how to replicate the aspects of it that you need for storytelling.
Oh, yeah.
So that you're authentic. And like, literally, there are two booths here with two people in each booth. And we can make, just based on what we see, I'm not going to, but we can make, just based on what we see, speculations about the individuals, their relationships to each other, possibly even their socioeconomic position. So once again, it's just like taking the information in without judgment. And even if your personal love or dislike is like kicks in, that's not what's useful to you at the moment. It's right. Get the information.
It's all expanding your Crayola box, right? Right? You could do a lot of things with that 8 crayon one.
Yeah.
But if you got your hands on that
64
or
the 64, 64, that was mine, yeah.
Even if it's little details, like let's think about fingernails for a minute,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm going to give you a couple of different descriptions, and you talk about a possible character that might inspire.
Okay.
Person with chewed up cuticles.
Somebody who's very nervous. It's a nervous habit.
Right. Maybe. You know? Right. Mm-hmm. Character has fingernails that are clipped, but at awkward angles.
Oh, interesting. I would
say...
You
know, like, just, like, look done,
right,
done quickly.
Right, right, right. Well, then, again, you know, that's either someone who did that in a hurry, or they know they don't want long fingernails, but they're not really fastidious.
Right.
They don't really care about perfection in that.
How about that polished, clear polished, perfectly done?
I would say somebody who goes to the salon or goes somewhere and has that done because right. It's got to look just right, so that they look just right, and I'm sure that is reflected in some of their other outerwear.
Right, and the fingernails where the dirt is impacted underneath.
Labor or you know something like that. Yeah,
right.
They work with their hands.
Right. You can even have those cracked fingernails, the yellowed fingernails. The
yellowed fingernails would make me think that either chemicals or they smoke.
Right, right. All of those things. Mm-hmm. We just played one little tiny thing. It gives us so many different ways into the character, and that goes from that to the hands to the this. I was recounting, this is something I teased my wife about, probably for 30 years now.
Oh, jeez.
Years ago, when I lived in, just before the kids were born, I redid the shingles on the back garage,
mm-hmm.
just the garage, right? And it, you know, it was all working with your hands and all that sort of stuff. And I came inside, and my mother-in-law was there, you know, being around Tina as she got prepared to have these babies. Somehow she touched my hands and she got so excited and she said, "Oh, Chris, you got a man hands." Because they were rough from holding the shingles and all that stuff. Normally, I'm holding a pen or typing.
Right.
You know, and these days, if you use, you know, everything's got moisturizer in it, you
mm-hmm.
know? Back in those days, the guy would scrub himself with this bar of soap.
Yeah, lava.
It was that thicker, it was like a brown, it looked like a piece of sandpaper, right?
Yep.
Any of those things, you know, help define the character and all that stuff.
It had pumice in it. Yes, yes.
So, ladies and gentlemen, whether it's a quiet place or a loud place, whether you're by yourself or in a crowd, you can always be working to tell the story.
I'm sorry, let's tell the damn story.
Tell the damn story. There you go.
Thank you. Take care, folks.